When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back, everybody. If you are here and this is the first time that you're listening to this episode and you didn't listen to last week, I want you to stop what you're doing. Go back and listen to last week's episode because we go into a lot of foundational stuff. So I promised myself that in the past episode, we would get right to the questions, but I realized there's so much nuance and so much foundational stuff that we needed to get through in order for everything else to make sense. And I really want you to go back and listen to last week's episode. In that episode, we talk about Nick's experience with evidence-based treatment for PTSD. We talk about the overlap of PTSD and OCD. And one more really important thing. I say this a lot, but if you're new, it's important that you hear me. Just because I'm saying OCD, it doesn't mean that I'm talking only to people who have OCD. I'm talking to people who experience obsessions, compulsions, racing thoughts, scary thoughts, fear, anxiety, whatever. If you feel like fear is ruling your life, this is going to be helpful for you. Let's get away from like the shiny names and the tags and the labels and everything. If fear is ruling your life and you feel like fear is making you live your life in a way that's making you smaller, this is for you. And specifically in this episode, it's a follow-up obviously from last week's episode. But in this episode, I'm going to have Nick, my husband, who is also a licensed professional counselor. He specializes in OCD, anxiety, and PTSD and trauma. He is knowledgeable where it comes to OCD and anxiety, which is what I obviously specialize in. And he has this additional training in evidence-based treatment for PTSD and trauma. Of course, when I said that to my crew on social media, everybody flourished and everybody got flurried to the question box. And they had a ton of questions because, as I mentioned in the previous episode, trauma is the rule, not the exception, when it comes to OCD and anxiety, because it's more common that somebody would have both. It's more common that somebody would have that trauma be the trigger that pulls the trigger on their OCD. Now, in the past episode, as we mentioned very thoroughly, nothing causes OCD. Trauma does not cause OCD, but it's still really important to know that if you're struggling with both, you're not in the minority. So there's lots of other people who are struggling with the same, and there's going to be lots of other people listening to this podcast. There's a lot of people who answered and submitted questions that you probably also have. And so we're going to go over those today. So Nick, jumping right into it, let's see. Oh my gosh, this is a good one. How do I know if I have trauma with OCD? And again, for those listening, I want to try to get away from the formal diagnoses of things because not everyone has access to that, right? Not everybody has the ability to just go and see a therapist or see a professional. And honestly, OCD gets misdiagnosed 80% of the time anyway. So knowing that, Nick, how does somebody know if they have trauma with OCD?
Sure. So that basis of what we see of an individual that they have OCD and they have consequences from their OCD, right? So maybe it's impacted a relationship, it's impacted work, it's called the loss of some kind, right? That's often the pieces of where the word trauma gets thrown around. And again, what we want to bring it back to is we can have stressful life events that occur, whether they're related to OCD or whether they're related to life on life's terms. But that opportunity for those stressful life events as and how we respond to them, that's again, that's what we're in charge of. That's what we're able to take the reins on when we have them. And that's the part that, again, when we have those negative life events that are, again, I lost my relationship because of OCD. It was traumatic, right? That those phrases being thrown together like that. The definition of what we consider trauma in any capacity is it's clinical and it's diagnostic. But what I'll often use is, again, a concept of a stressful life event, right? And what does that do? Yeah, it's hard. It's hard in many ways. And that's where it's like, this was traumatic for me. And that's the definition for that person, whether it really meets those criteria or not. But that's where we want to bring it back to. It's our behavioral responses as it relates to what OCD's impacted, what it's taken away, what it's swooped in and made our world really small. those are the pieces that we want to focus on. And that's the basis of the treatment that we turn to with ERP and trying to minimize those other losses or negative life events that are related to what OCD or anxiety is crippling us with.
Mm-hmm. I think too, people, when they hear terms like ERP, which is what we use a lot, it's an evidence-based treatment for OCD and anxiety, exposure and response prevention. When people hear ERP, they are thinking of one very specified thing, like this manualized treatment protocol where you do exposures and they're very rigid and you only do exposures. And like in all of my work, especially since I'm my own boss and I have my own business now and I get to formulate my own kind of thoughts about things and think more creatively and own my own like perceptions of how all of this stuff is organized in my brain without having someone else tell me what I need to be teaching people. It's like exposure and response prevention really boils down to three things. It boils down to doing things outside of your comfort zone. It boils down to reducing safety behaviors, and it boils down to reducing avoidance. And every human being who struggles with anxiety or fear in any capacity can benefit from doing those three things, like doing things outside of your comfort zone, challenging yourself to get outside of your comfort zone, reducing safety behaviors or quote unquote coping mechanisms that are dysfunctional, and then reducing avoidance. So that's what we're talking about. Another thing that I really wanted you to go into was the release word. Someone asked this question, and it wasn't just one person, like multiple people asked this question about how do I release trauma, or what are some types of therapy that help release past trauma? And my initial reaction to that was like, I don't want you guys to take the easy way out. Like, this is an example of people who are wanting a quick way out. This is an example of someone hearing a term from someone who's not actually a therapist, who heard something on social media or heard something else on social media. It sounds good in popular culture, but it's not actually evidence-based. This idea and this concept of releasing trauma is, to me, very similar to people who think they can cure anxiety or cure intrusive thoughts or cure OCD. It carries this suggestion that it's easy and that it's something that will happen to me and then I can release it. Not that you actually have to do the work, which is completely false, right? Like, you have to do the work. There's no way around it. You have to do the work. You can take this supplement. You can take this medication. You can do this type of therapy. You can do this type of therapy. And you're going to have to do the work, because it's not going to be that breathing technique that gets your life back. It's not going to be that lion's mane or that supplement or that medication that gets your life back. It might. We talked about supplements. We talked about medications. SSRIs are obviously super helpful for OCD and anxiety, but you have to do the work. You have to do the work. The word releasing here really triggered me because, and I was laughing with you and with Dr. Pinciotti the other day, you don't release trauma. You don't release intrusive thoughts. You don't release anxiety. You release a fart. You release your car keys when you come in the door. You release the towel before you or after you get in the shower, right? Like, you release those things. Insinuates that it's just effortless and it just happens and that you didn't have to put any effort in to release it. So talk to me about that. Your initial response to that question was, we talked about how a lot of people use that word. It's just an interesting choice of words. We talked about how, yes, that word implies ease and effortlessness and something that just happens, like without you actually having to go through the fire a little bit and having to do the work. But we talked about how we can work to understand trauma. We can work to process it. We can work to face it. We can work to make peace with it. But what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts about, like, quote unquote, releasing trauma and trauma being stored in the body and so on and so forth?
Sure. Yeah. I think you hinted towards a lot of where I want to go with this. But just again, the basis of releasing trauma, right? So just letting it go, right? I'm just going to drop it. I'm going to move on. And that process, it's all about the work. It is all about those opportunities to challenge yourself to ever, again, to release something is to be free of it, right? So the concept of being free of OCD, which again, we don't talk about it in the basis of it being gone. It's being symptom reduction and symptom stabilization that occurs over time, but it's not gone. It's a part of brain chemistry. It's a part of life. It's a part of memory, but we do, obviously people get better. But that concept of releasing is that somehow it'll just be gone and then I won't have to think about it ever again. But we know, again, that doesn't work. That's not how the brain works. And that's not how OCD works. That's not how PTSD works, is those specific associations are there. And you don't magically make them go away. Part of it is, again, you go back to the drawing board of all the work that you do, whether they're, again, that's in the work you do with your individual therapist, the work you're doing in the blueprint, and you come out on the other side, ideally feeling stronger and feeling more empowered and more confident. But it's all of that work with specific exposures related to your triggers, related to those specific thought patterns that are associated, all the avoidances, all the safety behaviors that you're actively challenging, and you come out on the other side. That's the ability to move beyond trauma or move beyond OCD, but we don't release it and it's magically, we drop it one day and we never think about it again. You pick it back up. There's always the memory there. Ideally, you respond to them differently when you are triggered in the future. And that's what the goal is, to see a sense of stability and symptoms, but knowing that it's a part of us, right? When what we are responsible for how we respond to OCD, we're responsible for how we respond to trauma.
Yeah. And that's something that you and I talk about a lot, especially as we start to work a little bit more together. We both believe very strongly, and I think most good therapists would agree, that you're not responsible for what has happened to you, but you are responsible for what you do about it. And I don't know, there are some people, like when I post that on social media, when I post about this radical responsibility piece, which is like one of our company values, radical responsibility. We take radical responsibility. We encourage and empower other people to take radical responsibility. Like, it's not this, it's not supposed to be this like shaming thing. Like, oh, I'm responsible for my trauma. Like, no, you're not responsible for what happens to you, but you are responsible for what you do about it. Like, do you want to continue to just run around in circles and spin your wheels in the mud and continue to feel awful constantly and go through this coping strategy and this coping strategy and try this therapy and try this therapy and still 20 years later, you're unable to feel anything because every time you feel uncomfortable, you have to go and distract yourself. And every time you're uncomfortable, you have to go and do a breathing strategy. That's not living. The living comes when you learn to feel anxious or feel sad or feel angry or feel uncomfortable, feel whatever, and you continue to do whatever it was that you were doing, that those two things can happen at the same time. When you learn and master the art of feeling anxious and still doing X, Y, Z, when you learn to feel sad and still do X, Y, and Z, that is living. That's values-based living. When you learn that your goal in your job isn't to make your anxiety better, it's just that your goal in your job is to not make anxiety worse. And as long as you are avoiding your triggers, as long as you are avoiding these memories, as long as you are practicing avoidance, as long as you are not going to those places, you are making your anxiety worse. In the short term, it might be feeling better, but in the long term, you are making it worse. We still had some people, and I have to remember, I have to remind myself that not every single person who finds me like has listened to every one of my podcasts, and someone could have just found me today. And so you and I, especially now, it's not just me anymore because you are in this ship too. It's not just me anymore, but like we have the job of having to be equally and if not more so convincing of encouraging people to do the hard thing. Like it would be so much easier to convince people to do like this quick breathing exercise or to snap this rubber band against their wrist to make the intrusive thought go away or to, yes, avoid that place in public and just, you know, give yourself loving touches instead or whatever the hell people advertise or try to get people to do. That just seems so much nicer and it seems so much more enticing. And unfortunately, it does jack shit. And so you and I have the task of trying to make it seem enticing to have people want to approach their fears. We have the daunting task of encouraging people and empowering people and convincing people that it's worthwhile and worth it to do the hard thing. That's a hard task.
No, it's definitely, again, that's the number one piece of any therapy that I've ever worked with a client on is avoidance, right? So it's the hard thing, the scary thing is I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to think about it. And that's the process of breaking that down so that it can become manageable because it can't. It is. It doesn't need to be dictate your life or how you interact with the world around you. And prior to OCD manifesting or prior to a traumatic event, it was an association you had, that thing or that place or that person was scary. And that's the piece that we can get back to. And that's what the goal is.
So you mentioned, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it, which is so true, right? Some people don't want to talk about it, but there are other people who just want to talk about it. They just want to go to a talk therapist. In fact, that was another question that we got, and it's the last one that I'll have for you, Nick, because I know that we have to wrap up. But there are some people who feel like, yeah, Jenna, I understand ERP for anxiety, but when it comes to trauma, I should just see a talk therapist, right? Tell me how we feel about talk therapists. Tell the audience how we feel about talk therapists.
There's no sense of direction. It is essentially a sounding board. Is it someone that listens to you and validates you? Sure. But there's not necessarily a defined goal and not necessarily a defined timeline. And that's where for treatment of trauma, you want a very specific approach and evidence-based approach. And within that specific timelines to get better, not just come in and tell me about your day or tell me about what occurred, because it's helpful from we know what that does to the brain. There is a sense of it is helpful in some capacity. Otherwise, therapy in that context wouldn't exist. But the actual benefit when we look at these specific diagnoses with OCD and PTSD specifically, it's you're not really making any headway or very minimal at best. And that's because you're not really addressing the main issues. You're coming in and you're talking and you may spend an hour talking and you're telling me about your day and what's going on and all of those things. But it ends up being where the progress that needs to be made is outside of therapy, is outside of, and it's all the work that you're doing. Right? When you leave the office with your therapist or in what you're doing with the blueprint, it's that taking those exercises, the ritual prevention, all of that very seriously, because that's the treatment. Talking about it is like anything. You can tell me about anything, but it's the action that matters.
Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that we don't talk. Hey, I don't see one-on-one clients anymore. I haven't taken on new clients for a very long time. I don't see myself taking one-on-one clients in the future, but I do still, from before I stopped taking clients, I still have clients who are on my list, and I would never abandon them or whatever. And I was just meeting with someone yesterday. She just had a baby. And it's not like we don't talk. I want you guys to be very clear. It's not this black or white thing. It's not like, oh, I do ERP or I do talk therapy. It's a good therapist, a good integrated approach integrates a lot of different evidence-based strategies. And that's what we do in the blueprint. So that's why in the blueprint, I was very thoughtful. There is a heavy exposure element, especially in the more general sense. I help you make sense of pushing yourself outside of your comfort zone. I help you strategize ways to do that. I talked to you about reducing avoidance and the cycles there and how to go about reducing avoidance and meticulously making your own little homework assignments for yourself. I basically teach you how to be your own therapist, but there's lots of other approaches in there. We go over cognitive distortions. We go over non-engagement strategies. There's lots of cognitive stuff in there. I talk about the justifying your mental compulsions. In the session that I just had with my client yesterday, of course we talk. We talk and we talk about this place that she just went to and what's been going on for her. And she's been writing down these things that have been triggering her. And as I'm talking, of course, I'm validating. And of course, I'm saying, of course, it makes sense that, you know, are anxious with your new baby. You literally just brought him home. Of course, it makes sense that you're anxious with your new baby. Providing validation, providing that place to be a soft landing and a good sounding board. And I'm always wrapping up the session, as well as throughout the session, I'm bringing it back to strategies. I'm bringing it back to homework assignments and specific things that this person needs to be doing that are very action oriented and practical, that we're not just talking endlessly and like having a conversation, and I'm not here just validating you. There is a lot of that because you're human, and it's not just like we're going to sit here and just talk about exposures and it's very mechanicalistic like that. It's very integrated. And so that's why I want you all to think about it. It's much less black and white than you're probably making it. There's room in an exposure and response prevention type of strategy for there to be some other work involved. And again, that's why we put all that into the blueprint. We put a lot of stuff in there about self-compassion. We put a lot of stuff in there about supporting family members and being supported by family members. We put all that in the blueprint because it's all a part of an integrated approach. So, Nick, thank you so much for being here. Nick is going to be more and more of a familiar face. So don't worry, a familiar voice and face, I should say. But that wraps up this episode. Stay tuned next week. We have a really great guest expert. And then we might just have Nick back. Who knows? I'm not sure of the plan quite yet. But more to come on that. Thank you guys so much for being here. If you have any other questions, head to the show notes. We have some more resources, some more areas of support for you. I hope you liked it. Thank you, Nick, for being here. And until next time, you guys, keep doing all the hard things.